broadcasting 24/7 from the top of the Niagara Escarpment.
You're listening to a show called Dangerfield on 101.5 The Hawk FM. I'm Mary, and tonight my guest is Paul Linklater. Paul is a Canadian musician who has played in many bands, including The Pinecones, Colleen and Paul, The Dini Band, Communism, Scribbled Out Man, and more. He's a producer, engineer, and music teacher, and has played on dozens of recordings with music legends, including everyone from Andy Kim to John K. Samson to Ron Sexsmith. So thanks so much for joining tonight, Paul. Welcome to the show.
Ah, thank you very much. My pleasure to be here.
Yeah. So let's start off the show with your most recent song that you put out. It's called Spirit Day, and then we'll come back and chat a little bit, okay?
Super cool.
Children and their teachers folding back the bleachers, leaning to the light. Women and their mothers innervate each other, leaning to the light. It's a pretty good light. Spirit Day.
Love you miles away.
Shakespeare day.
That was Spirit Day by Paul Linklater. Paul is joining me tonight on Dangerfield. So, Paul, you put out this song just at the end of January. And for those who want to find the music, you can find Paul at paullinklater.bandcamp.com or at paullinklater.com and then on streaming platforms. And so you played on that song guitars, drums, vocals, keyboards. When did you write it, and what was the process like putting that together?
Yeah, the song started, I think, before, or in Toronto, before the, right the week or two before lockdown, there was the teacher strike. Mm-hmm. And schools were shut down, and then that kind of bled into lockdown. So it was right around then when I started thinking about, you know, this opening line of children and their teachers folding back the bleachers. And even the idea of Spirit Day, it's kind of like school and all this stuff seems mundane. But when you don't have it, there's a certain sweetness. And you realize, oh, it's pretty innocent and nice, you know, all these kids. So kind of started around then. And then it just sat around for like 6 months. And then on New Year's Eve, I actually, my wife Donna and my little boy Marvin, they went out sledding. And so I had the house for a couple hours. And I didn't really do anything. And then like 20 minutes right before they were going to come home, I was like, I'm going to record something. And just ran over and bashed it out, you know, in one take, pretty quickly. Really sloppy. Like it didn't have an ending. So it actually caused some problems. You know, it took a while to figure out the ending because it didn't, it just kind of rambled off. So I had to kind of figure that out. So yeah, it's like on New Year's Eve, you know, last day of 2020.
Yes, that's a good way to start the year. And so your studio, it's called Malamute. Is that the correct name for it?
Yeah, that's just the credit I give it. But it's where I teach out of, it's where I record, it's where I do drawings and paintings, and it's just my space. I usually just call it that on records, but it's like my basement that's just full of amps and guitars and drums and drawing stuff. And
yeah, and so you did the artwork that when people visit the sites to kind of look at it, you did the artwork for the song, correct? Yeah?
Yeah, that's one of my drawings.
And was that linked to the song specifically, or did you like kind of match it up after the song was done?
Yeah, I matched it up after the fact. And I liked it. It was kind of, the drawing has a slightly darker edge than the song itself. Or what did I say? The drawing has a darker edge. So I thought it kind of, I don't know, it balanced it out.
Yeah,
it's a little bit of a drawing.
And when you draw, like, are the books that you write or draw in, or like, do you kind of combine like your lyric writing in the same books as your art, or like what kind of scale is the art that you draw? Like, is it journal?
Yeah, the art is a lot bigger. It's like 16x24. Hmm. So it's like, you know, like that's like the size of a poster.
Okay.
So I use like big, you know, I like really big paper. You can actually get bigger paper, but I like, yeah, fairly big paper and just like do the drawing on that. And then, yeah, I like to use like Moleskin books for lyrics. Or, you know, the Moleskin graph paper books are the best I find for lyrics.
Okay. Yeah. Like I like Moleskins as well. Do you use the hardcover or the soft cover?
I do. I like the soft cover because it's a little bigger and you can, you know, actually, I heard about that from an interview with David Byrne, I think, from the
really?
Talking Head. Yeah. He recommends using the larger graph paper because you can fit a whole song on two pages. But if you're using the little one, it's pretty easy for the song, you know, if you're writing it, for it to ramble over like four or five pages.
Right. Have you read his book? What's it called? It's like white cover music. What is it called?
The How Music Works or something.
How
like
Music
that.
Works. That's it. Yeah. Yeah. He's super interesting. I recall he had a blog that he would keep kind of when he would explore cities that he traveled in. He would bring his bike and just kind of like, you know, ride his bike around it and explore the cities, which I think oftentimes when musicians are traveling, you don't get a lot of time, right, to explore the cities, right?
It depends for sure. But sometimes you have too much time to explore the city, and then other times you have like no time and you're nowhere near where the actual cool part of the city is you'd want to explore. And it just, it's all over the place. But I can see taking like a folding bike, because you could fold, you know, one of those.
Right.
And like tuck in with the gear.
Have you seen him perform live?
What's that?
Have you seen him perform live ever?
I just saw the movie Stop Making Sense.
Right. Well, you should check out. So he did a Broadway musical.
Oh, I saw some of that, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. I actually went and saw it on Broadway, and it was just like, I saw it, I guess, kind of maybe like the fall, like not, I guess, obviously not last fall, but the fall before. And he's pretty incredible. He's got such an interesting use of like space and sound. Like he had such an interesting way of just kind of like moving about and using every inch of the space and not really needing any backdrop. So that was kind of cool. And so you're from Winnipeg, right?
Close to Winnipeg. Like I'm closer to Brandon.
Okay.
But they live out really in the middle of just the country. So I'm kind of from the country, I guess.
Okay. And you moved here in what, like the early 2000s?
Yeah, like 2004 or 3 or something like that.
And so when you moved here, was that to play in the Dini band? Or was that just like you, like what happened there? Like what was the process of moving here and what did you choose to move here?
That was, Bedini was, he was going to Italy to write a book about Italian baseball. Like, I guess Canadian soldiers after World War II, some of them were still there, and they started up a baseball league, and it caught on, and it just kept going. So he went to play in that baseball league with a bunch of Italians and live over there with his family for 3 months. So we came and me and Donna came and sublet his house.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, he just needed a subletter, and that's how, but we had known, you know, him from going to see the Rios and sending letters back and forth and stuff like that.
And what's your favorite Rio Static song?
Oh, that's a good question. I really like Self-Serve Gas Station.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Another trucker stumbles. That's a good little.
So for those that are just tuning in, you're listening to Dangerfield, and I'm talking with Paul Linklater tonight. And so, Paul, Dave Bandini, who we just spoke of, he's got a community newspaper now called The Western Phoenix, and you had a song that you contributed to like an album they put out. I think, was it around Christmas, or can you talk?
Yeah, about like that? Christmas Flexus.
And what song was that?
I just made it up on the spot with Marvin, my kid, and it's just like, it's called Comfy and Warm.
No way. It's
just, like, the ideas they had, like Geddy Lee and some of their the notable subscribers sending out Christmas wishes, and then they just needed something to lay it over top of. Or my job was to collect all those and edit them and fit them into a 3-minute thing. So I just made that song. I actually like that song a lot.
Can we play it? Yeah?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Okay, well, let's listen to Comfy and Warm by Paul Linklater and his son Marvin.
This is Alex Lifeson, and I'm wishing you a very happy and safe holiday.
You got to stay comfy and warm.
space, space.
Hey, this is Serena Ryder from Parkdale wishing you the happiest of holidays.
You got to stay, stay.
Hi, this is Geddy Lee wishing all the West End Phoenix readers a happy holidays.
You got to stay, stay, stay. Come here.
And remember to support your local paper.
Stay, stay.
Hey, it's Michi Me on this mic saying happy holidays from my family to yours and everyone here at West End Phoenix. I hope you're enjoying your family.
Hey there, this is Colin McDonald from The Trues, just wishing my neighborhood of Parkdale a very happy holidays.
Leo Routens here, the kid from Keel Street. Just wanted to wish you a wonderful and safe holiday season.
Hey everybody, this is Luke Doucette.
Hey, this is Melissa McClellan, and we are the band White Horse.
Wishing you a Merry Christmas. Happy Holidays.
Hello everybody out there. The coldest correspondent, your seasonal scribe, Michael Winter. Happy Christmas. May peace and love be with you.
All the best.
Peace.
That was Comfy and Warm by Paul Glitter, who's joining me tonight. And so, Paul, you mentioned that that was you and your son. How old is your son?
He's six now, but he would have been four then, I think.
Right. And so, and did you grow up in a musical family?
Not really. But at the same time, my dad, he was really into music and, you know, he had his little record collection and he's like, he really loved guitar, except one of his fingers got smashed. Like, so look, we always called it the spoon finger because it looked like a giant wooden spoon. So he kind of limited his.
Which finger was it? Like, was it like Jerry Garcia? Was it the middle one?
Yeah, well, it was the middle one of the left hand. So it really, like, I think it slowed him down a bit.
Right.
But so there's always guitars around and we would play together and he would kind of like, especially on a Friday night, and we'd sit down and play together and he would definitely offer, like, no, play it again. You got to get your tempo up. Nice brisk. You know, I think he was really into me playing guitar, so he encouraged me a lot.
Cool. And so what's your favorite kind of guitar to play?
I think essentially if I had to pick one kind of guitar, that's tough. I'd probably go with nylon string acoustic, oddly enough.
Mm-hmm. And so you actually, you teach music, correct? Yeah?
Yeah, I teach guitar, songwriting, and music theory and all that stuff.
And I saw that you you actually did a course where you taught at U of T, and it was about songwriting and basically open to all skill sets. So what was the kind of demographic of people that took part in that course, and what was that experience like?
It was good experience. I don't know, if I did it for like 4 years. So that was a pretty good run. And yeah, it was a lot of, there was like young singer-songwriter kids, you know, like indie type kids. And then there were some older people that were, you know, kind of corporate, you know, coming from being an account, you know, from the corporate world into that. And then there'd be some really, there's always a couple rappers, you know, like it was pretty wide open. So, but I don't find that daunting at all. I feel like genre and coolness, different groups, you know, all these little subsections of music, I often feel like those are it's bullshit, you know, like people. And if, you know, if an accountant is going to tell his story, to me, that's just as interesting as anything, Bruce Springsteen has to say, or, you know,
How would you structure, how would you structure a course like that? Like, where do you start and how do you kind of guide people through, the creative process?
Well, it's for the class, it had to be more classroom structured. And the first half of the lesson was it's like a 3-hour night. And the first half, so hour and a half or so was, chords, theory, understanding harmony. Cause a lot of people feel, I think, come in like they know G, they've got C and D, but you know, they want some other, they want an understanding of the nuts and bolts of theory and also song structure. So you handle the nuts and bolts in the first half, and then I would give a prompt for a song topic, like write a song about someone you shouldn't be writing a song about. You know, like something juicy, or try to write a song where you're talking to someone who's died, someone in your life that you've lost that you didn't have a chance to say what you wanted to say to. You know, a lyrical prompt.
Yeah.
And then they would come in the next week with either a full song or just a fragment, whatever the person had time. And then the group would just kind of, you'd go around and give feedback. Now, in a normal, like in a lesson where they come to my house, it's a lot more one-on-one.
Uh-huh. And how much, so you speak a bit about music theory. So do you feel that, like, I think that there's kind of like two schools, right? So like there's like for example, you know, like I learned music like at like Royal Conservatory, so it's very kind of like structured. And then there's other people that learn just like by sound and by teaching. Like how do you weigh the two in your mind of how to teach? Like how does that, what's your process like for that?
Well, I would say the conservatory type approach to theory and that side is extremely outdated.
Mm-hmm.
So at the same time, it's something, right?
It's constraining, right? Because it's about more playing back more than exploring, I think, right?
Yeah, and it also, it's a lot of it doesn't ask the big questions, like why, right. You know, why does this chord work going to that one? What is, you know, so it's kind of old fashioned. It's almost like the student should be seen and not heard.
Right. And when you hear like, and so were you writing a book about music theory? Is that correct?
Yeah, I ended up, I think I finished it. I just, at the end of it, I just started teaching it in my classes, like giving out pages. So I've never actually put it all in one. Like my original plan was to get it in one binder and like anybody that came in for lessons would get, you know, get the book. But I kind of just started handing out just one page at a time not out of laziness, but I've got a kid, you know, like I feel like I got to watch, you know, I got to watch how I spend my time. So I tend to do things. It's just like spirit day. I tend to do things as quickly as possible. I think a lot of dads would relate. It's like okay, 20 minutes here, half an hour, you know, like it's kind of like that. But yeah, I think it's all about hearing. It's all by ear, you know, music theory. You got to have it. I always call it to the studio or to the students. I refer to it as your radio. Like you have a radio in your inner ear and you gotta have the music coming out of there.
Mm-hmm.
It's about internalizing the changes and being able to not just say, it's a G to a C, but hearing it as like a gong, gong, dong, 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 you know, like that was a G to a C.
And do you think music is infinite or finite?
Infinite. And I think it's, there's a lot of, there's a lot of philosophy in music theory that I think people miss, and that, okay, we're getting into heavy stuff, but it's like, to me, it's all about, there's a duality. There's consonance, dissonance, good, evil, light, dark, Democrat, Republican. It's like music functions on that kind of duality. Yeah. And there's no solution to consonance versus dissonance. It's just purely about compromise. And I feel like that's the big lesson that I hit when I really looked at the physics of music. I realized there's no solution. There's no mathematical solution to music. It's just a series of compromises that you're willing to make.
And what are your thoughts on like, what are your thoughts on like how people have now started to kind of look at like the equation almost of music? So people have like almost like that, like, you know, artificial intelligence thing where people will funnel like, you know, song hits through a generator and then pick out kind of like the components of a hit song. What are your thoughts on that?
That's interesting content, but a lot of that type of quest for understanding, I feel like is you're walking in the wrong direction.
Yeah. Like it's kind of like, because there's such a link to culture at the same time, right? And where people are in society, I think, you know, that determines what is successful.
Yeah, well, and it depends what you mean by success. Like for something to be on drive time radio, like a hit modern country song, there's definitely, I watched a really interesting guy who was like a Nashville type dude, you know, like a co-writing guy that just writes. And I think he had a charting hit for Crystal Gale or something like that. And he says like the component of a hit song is it has to be, it's like some formula where there's a guy who wants to get the love of some woman, but the guy is flawed, but he's flawed in a way that an everyday, you know, like he's not Mr. Perfect, but his heart's in the right place kind of character.
Right. And, yeah. It's kind of like, well, so much of country is like, it's like trucks, you know, women and whiskey, like the modern country.
Yeah. So, I mean, I have no understanding of that, but what were we talking about? I forget. Oh, how people analyze music and take it apart.
Oh, right, right.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, for sure. Well, I think that's pop analysis, and that's cool. But I think, honestly, that if you look backwards, this is going to be boring. But if you look at the ancient Greeks, they had all this stuff mapped out. You know, the guy Pythagoras, who we know from
his theorem.
Yeah, his theorem in grade 9, whatever. I can't remember what that is, but he's the guy that originally mapped out music based on vibration. And
really?
He pretty much nailed it. Yeah, yeah.
And do you, like, how sensitive are your ears? Like, because I think everyone has different kind of levels of sensitivity with, like, volume, with pitch, and all that. Like, what would you say yours is?
Yeah, they're extremely sensitive in volume and like tone quality. Like if something is a really harsh tone, it'll just kill me. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I know I've lost a lot of hearing.
Yeah.
Just from being on stage and next to drums and like there's definitely my right ear is nowhere near as sensitive as my left ear. Like if I'm monitoring a mix, I often try to just point my left ear at it. And
Funny because, sorry to interrupt you there, but as an audience member, my left ear is blown because I used to always stand in the same spot at the Horseshoe for like all the shows, and I'd be like,
"That'll do it, man!" Oh, yeah. Horseshoe is so loud, it's ridiculous.
So yeah, so that's funny. And so you're like, for those just joining, you're listening to Paul Linklater, who's joining me on Dangerfield tonight. So Paul, let's listen to another song of yours, and then why don't we listen to, let's listen to Gloomy Monday from your band, The Pine Cones, and then we'll come back and we'll chat, okay?
Right on.
Gloomy Monday, and I'm joined tonight with Paul Linklater, who, and that was your band, The Pine Cones, which was described as makers of jingle jangle and shalala, harmony rock from the Queen City, Canada. And so that was, you put that out in with a gentleman called Brent Randall. How did you guys meet and come together?
I saw him play in Halifax, but like on a really early trip there with Colleen, like 2005. And it's one of those things, like you go on tour and you see, you know, you see all the opening bands and you see a band every night. And finally, when we got to Halifax, you know, I don't think we were even playing with him. He was just playing the night after us or something. So we went to check it out and I was blown away, you know, like he had a seven-piece band or something like that. And, you know, that had like classical instruments mixed in and he was playing piano. And I was just frankly blown away at the time because everything else was so garagey and kind of, you know, grungy. And this was so orchestral. And so I came back remembering that show. And then maybe 2 years later, he moved to Toronto with like just two guys that were in the band, just a fraction of his band. And I bumped into him outside of Paul's Boutique in Kensington Market. And it was really cold. And I was like, oh, hey, I recognize you. And, you know, if you ever need anything, like, you know, a place to record or any extra musicians, you know, I was trying to be like a Toronto host. Yeah, let me help you, you know? And So I ended up playing like banjo and piano and, you know, like multi-instrumental. And then Brent came over one day to just do some demos. Mm-hmm. And that was this album before that one called Sage. And it was, our demos were just awesome. Like they just turned out, I felt like we kind of had a real yin yang, like, yeah. And so we made these killer demos and ended up releasing them. And I was playing drums on all the demos, so I became the drummer in the band, toured on drums for a bit, and then it morphed into a trio. And then we, yeah.
You met Brent from that band when you were on tour with Colleen. And so there's an interesting story about how, I guess, Colleen was, at the time she was in By Divine Right when you guys met, and you were playing in the Scribbled Out Man with Don Kerr of Rio Statics and Dougie, I believe, right, from Pete Elkins.
Yep.
And I guess she loved your guitar playing and asked to take guitar lessons from you. And then you said that you didn't want to, because she had her own style and you didn't want to teach that. So you guys just ended up playing together from that, right?
Yeah. I think we were going to do a guitar lesson, but we ended up just writing a song. Like the lesson just turned into a songwriting thing. And
what was the first song that you guys wrote together?
I think it was that one that's like, I can only wake it from you. It made it on the record, but kind of like right at the bottom, you know, like track 10.
Yeah.
And I don't know exactly what happened after that. And then we did like a tour as a duo where I would play drums and she would play guitar and we'd switch off halfway through. And that was a good format. And I think that's the first East Coast tour I ever did.
Travel alleyways go creeping.
And so you've been all across Canada playing music. So you've been, have you been to every province? Would you say that you've played every province? Yeah.
Oh, for sure. The only place that I haven't been is Iqaluit.
Oh, right.
But I've been to like Northwest Territories and Yukon, Queen Charlotte Island, like all the, you know, that's Bedini though. He likes to get to, he likes to get to the corners of the borders, you know? And I've been to every province except the Iqaluit, I guess.
And have you, like, you know, he writes a lot of books. Like, have you ever thought about writing, like, about your music experiences, or do you prefer to sing about them?
I've never thought about it. I think I've thought of getting into writing, but maybe fiction. I have a couple crazy, or you know what I thought of getting into? Screenwriting, actually.
Oh, yeah. The thing about screenwriting that I don't think I can wrap my head around is there's that, like, that format that you have to follow, right? Like, it's very...
3-act structure, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, I don't think my brain works that way. But...
I think my brain does a little bit.
Like, yeah, like especially that. because you write music, so that's, it's kind of like...
Well, music is just incidental. Like, that's what I think I happened to be really into for the longest, but to me, my brain is like, if there's a format or a formula or a, you know, thing to learn, it'll want to just tear into that and, you know, work within those constraints. Like, I feel like, I like when there's no constraints too, but I find it fascinating. Like, okay, what do I do within this formula? And how can I definitely like that when there's formulas, and also when you can murderize them, you know, like pushing them. And I do that a lot in everything, like song structure and daily.
Yeah, so when you hear a song, do you, like, I guess, kind of two questions. So when you hear a song, do you kind of visualize it in your mind, like the notes, and or do you add to it, like in your mind, like what you would add around it or take
off? Oh, for sure. I'm a super, super aggressive listener.
Mm-hmm.
And really aggressive, like even if I'm eating a sandwich, or I guess, you know, like if there was some background music on at a restaurant, I'd be tearing it apart. Big time. I'll analyze all aspects of it, and I'll be looking at the lyrics, I'll be looking at the music, but often a lot of music is not, you can usually, I think most musicians can hear a lot of it is just the same. There's not a lot of music that has a chord change, for example, that you wouldn't know what it was.
Right. Yeah. Or like sometimes, like when I hear music, like I hear it as like an equation. I'm like, it's like this plus this times this minus this, you know, like it's kind of like.
Oh, big time. Yeah. Like, yeah. And like, okay, it's got a little touch of.
Yeah.
Bernstein mixed in with some. Yeah. It's funny. Like nowadays there's a certain, because of the internet, there's a democratization of, you know, anybody can create a recording, anybody can do it. But I feel like there's still only a small handful of stuff that's actually good.
Yeah, for sure. So like,
there's more to wade through. Or I don't know, you know what it's like. It's like, how often do you actually see something that blows you away? And you're like, I got to step up my game. Like, it's not often because, I don't know. There's only so many people.
Yeah, but it's such a magic combo, though, eh? When you do, like, hear something that just kind of cuts through it all. You're like, oh, that's, you know?
It's like this guy is creating, or girl is creating their own little world in their music. Uh-huh. And you're like, oh, geez, that's the real thing. It just hits you. And a lot of it is not technical, right, Mary? It's like a lot of it, I feel like, is the person's perspective.
Yeah,
you know, the way they're coming at the angle. And
there's so much that's psychological about it too, because I think a lot of like creators like get kind of constrained by like maybe like a format or an expectation, right? And then that can end up limiting like where they explore, right?
Oh, big time. Or like sometimes there'll be something that you just don't want to do. You know, like, I just don't want to go there. I, you know, and you'll throw the whole song out. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, it gets so that you're looking at what other people are doing and trying to do something that relates but is unique, and like it gets really, I don't know, a little too cerebral maybe.
Yeah. And I think that so then when you kind of like when you collaborate with people, or you know, like you've played with a lot of great musicians in addition to being one yourself, and so when you're asked to play on someone else's music, do you find that you feel free to like maybe make suggestions, or do you feel like you're there to play, like, or how do you balance that?
Oh, you got to read the situation. I think like you got to watch, because sometimes people don't want anything, like they just want the bare minimum, and you got, like when I was younger I used to find that stifling maybe, but now I don't at all. I feel like, okay, how can I just completely make this person happy, or not make them happy, but make their thing, the thing they're trying to do, how do I make that happen? And that's a real challenge, you know, for me, because I have a tendency to overplay perhaps, you know.
In what way?
Play too many notes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like I have to watch it like a hawk. Yeah.
It's like that whole, like filling the space, or like editing, I guess, right?
Well, that's the thing. And sometimes you don't, like it's fine. Say you're in a recording situation, you do one take, and then you get a chance to hear it back. And you're like, whoa, okay, let's cut this down by, you know, I got to pick way fewer spots, but sometimes you don't get a chance to do that, and then you'll hear it back later and you're like, oh god, you know, I played way too many notes on this thing.
and where do you think that stems from? Is that from like a style of music that you like? Is it like kind of like, is it a jazz based kind of approach, or like jam bandy, or like where does that come from, you think?
I think maybe it was what I listened, like, no, this sounds crazy, but I, like, a lot of my early stuff that I learned was off of 60s records, and especially, like, stuff like even Gordon Lightfoot, and the thing is, on those records, there's a lick, a guitar, something happening in every possible spot, and that's the stuff that my dad was making me learn. And so I think it maybe comes from that, because it's just such a noodly, especially the early 60s stuff.
Yeah.
It's like there's a ton of guitar on there. So maybe it comes from that.
It's got that kind of rolling motion sound to it, right? Like that kind of like traveling.
Yeah, like just constantly it's like it's like every little spot is just full of noodling.
Yeah, and what record would you say that you've listened to the most out of all your records?
Oh, wow. Jeez. The most. Like, in my whole life?
Yeah, like, if you, like, or, like, okay, maybe another way to say it is, like, what's your kind of, like, maybe divide it by, like, emotions. Like, what's your favorite kind of, like, rocking out song to listen to?
I like the Replacements right now, you know, Replacements, Let It Be album. So, I Will Dare, or like, Favorite Thing. Oh, you know, what's a big song for me right now is, that Communication Breakdown by Led Zeppelin. I don't like Led Zeppelin very much, frankly, but that song just, it's like 2 minutes long. It's just, totally cool. Awesome. Almost sounds like do you ever think like that's where the Ramones got their sound from? You know, from that Communication Breakdown riff? Yeah, there's like an exact Ramones song that does that exact riff. It's, so I like that stuff.
Your favorite like lyric from the song?
From any song?
Yeah.
Well, you know, there's that Rios tune I mentioned earlier, Self-Serve Gas Station. There's a great line in the middle where he says, No one said this would be easy, but no one said this would be hell. No one said this would be easy, but no one said this would be hell. Like, yeah. That's such a best
my
line.
My favorite Rio song, I think it's like, I like Dope Fiends and Booze Hounds.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And I like Northern Wish. Did you ever go to those shows when they played at the Horseshoe Tavern, like the Fall or the Fall Nationals, Winter Nationals?
Yeah. Oh, of course. I think I played at a lot of those, like opened them. And
yeah. I remember, like, remember they had the wheel that you would spin, like the song? And I spun, yeah. I spun it, and it was Northern Wish, which is like the duality of like the two, which is kind of cool. Yeah.
Yeah, I love Northern Wish. Yeah, it's hard to pick with the Rios. Like, they've got some just super classic songs that are so technical, but at the same time, they might only have like three chords, you know?
So, okay, so Spirit Day. So what's happening next with you? Like, what, so that song sounds like it's the start of an album.
Yeah, I'm thinking of getting another one going, but right now I'm sidetracked working on track for a certain project that I'm finishing at right now. And then after that, yeah, I have a giant pile of songs to pick from what I'm going to do next. So,
and do you ever go back to older songs and then reinterpret them that you've written?
Yeah, that's funny you should say that, because I'm actually thinking about doing that maybe.
Yeah.
With that song, Stay Together.
Cool. Oh.
A couple of people have told me that recently, like, because I do have some tunes that, like, I can remember playing them live, really, you know, people really responded to them, and they were the big song of the moment, but I never had my shit together to record them properly.
Right. Why don't we listen to Stay Together? And then by Paul Linklater, and then maybe the next time you're on the show, you can play your new version for us, okay?
That's far out.
Thank you. Do you really want to be?
Thanks so much for joining tonight, Paul. It was really fun chatting. That was a really, really interesting conversation. I appreciate your time. That was great.
Oh, thank you. I found it interesting too. Good questions.
Thank you. Well, have a lovely night, and we'll be in touch soon, okay?
Thanks so much, Mary.
Okay, bye, Paul.
Bye-bye.